The Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you, as always, by Patreon.com/JURY. Go ahead and support this program as well as my One Mic Politics show, Politics, Politics, Politics. It is available to you right now. And, of course, in April, we are going to go on the road. We are going to do a little Jury in Your House tour. It is going to be in the Northeast this time. So if you are in the Northeast, we're talking New York, Jersey, Connecticut, I might even head down to south as the DMV, huh? The DC, where you at? Go ahead and holler at me. It's going to be a weekend of fun. I'm going to do live shows. It'll be in your living room. Man, we'll have a blast. Go ahead and check it out. Patreon.com/JURY. But enough of talking about how we do the show. What do you say? Instead, we just do the damn thing.
Ugly ain't the half, look at you. Well, you got blue teeth and you only got two teeth, but I kinda like to see you smile. And it appears that over the years you've turned into a big old steaming pile. And she said, yeah, I know I ain't no supermodel. I said, you ain't a hand model, baby, but that's fine. Ugly by most people's standards, but you're all right by mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Justin Robert Young Podcast. My name is indeed Justin Robert Young. It's not just a clever name. To be honest, it's not that clever of a show. Welcome, everybody. We are back here on our normal Tuesday morning time slot. Thanks to all of you for joining us here. I want to start everything off on a personal note, because a lot of this show is just literally whatever the hot hell I want to talk about. And what I would like to talk about right now is the fact that my back hurts. I know. We're making this big push onto Twitch, right? We're about to get partnered. Hip, cool, youth things. My back hurts. Everybody surfing on a skateboard, doing lines of stuff that you've never even heard of. Cool youth things. My back hurts. Who wants to speed run a game that was invented that is you got a Steam beta key from your drug dealer? Youth cool things on twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. When I sleep wrong, my back hurts. And when I sit down and live stream for hours, my back locks up. I'm starting to get old is what I'm saying. Now, I've kind of always had, even when I was a younger man, I've had back things. I used to have a girlfriend that when I would sleep in her bed, she had a very soft bed. You guys ever do this? You ever had this? It ever happened to you? She had a very soft bed, and when I got out of the bed, I would feel like I was in a car accident. Like, it was the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing. I don't know what it is. I think I might need a new mattress. I might need a firmer mattress. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Dr. said I need a bacchiotomy. Whoever got that reference, just go ahead and email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I don't know. I don't know. If you have any back advice, let me know. Holler at me. And I will take your back advice. But now my back is locking up. I don't know. It kind of ruined my run this morning. It was just I'm falling apart, you guys. It's just nothing's happening that's right or cool. Everything's just a federal disaster. But you want to know what? At least I'm not this cow in New York. Y'all seen this cow? Y'all seen this here? Y'all seen this rogue cow here? Rogue cow running through New York City, Queens, to be exact. Let's go ahead and take a look here. Here we go. It is the third loose cow in Queens in the last 14 months. We read now from New York Forest Story. A rogue cow running through Queens drew a huge law enforcement response on Tuesday as it ducked under caution tape and sidestepped police officers, eluding cops for hours before it was taken custody in someone's backyard. Initial details as to where the cow came from and how it got loose were not available, but the NYPD cornered the animal in Jamaica, Queens, around 12:30 p.m. after getting reports of sightings in various neighborhoods over the course of the morning. Here's a look at this cow. Oh, my God. This is a very evocative photo here. We got this cow here in the middle of the street. And apparently a passerby is trying to punch it. Trying to punch this cow right in its cow butt. Dude, I'll tell you what. Southside Jamaica, Queens. Ninny, you heard me. That's 50 cents. Old stomping grounds. It all came to an end. The cow appeared exhausted by 12:15 p.m., settling in the middle of the street as officers armed with tranquilizer equipment tried and failed once again to take the animal into custody. About 10 minutes later, the animal was apprehended in somebody's backyard. Its legs were tied to keep it immobile as at least half a dozen police officers crowded around it. Something similar happened twice last year in January and April when cows escaped slaughterhouses. In the second case, comedian Jon Stewart took possession of the bull and transferred it to an animal sanctuary that he owns. It's not immediately clear what the fate of this rogue cow is going to be. This is, I feel like this is something that we could, who's going to step up and buy this cow? What New York celebrity would you prefer buy this cow? I feel like right now Charles Oakley should buy this cow. James Dolan should buy this cow. Carmelo Anthony, who might get traded from the New York Knicks, my dear classmate, Carmelo Anthony, should just say, hey, listen, as a sign to the city of New York, I'm going to bring this cow in. And I'm going to ride him out of town. Hello, I'm Carmelo Anthony, embattled forward for the New York Knicks, and now I, like this cow, will find my freedom from the slaughterhouse that is Madison Square Garden. And he just gets on his cow and he's you know, trotting off to whatever new NBA cities. Crocodile's got it. A happy trails to you. He goes ahead and pulls down his cowboy hat. Another Jay Martin gets credit for yes. And now you can call me Cowmelo Anthony. I'm moving on out of New York. Billy Joel should buy the cow. Because he's moving out. Come on, I need more New York. I need more New York. Who's buying this cow? Who's buying this cow? We need to make sure that this cow goes to the right owners. New York City. concrete jungle where dreams are made of and bovines get mad loose. Now you're in New York. Oh, man, Woody Allen. Woody Allen would be a great, he would make the cow, he'd put the cow in a very well done but kind of boring 2-hour long dramedy, right? You know, or he'd just have Jesse Eisenberg stand in front of the cow. It'd be Jesse Eisenberg playing the Woody Allen role in the Woody Allen movie because Woody Allen can't play it anymore because he's too old. Just looking at the cow and just, you know, saying like, what, you know, in a lot of ways, you're more free than I am. There we go. I like to call that one Hell's Bells, a Woody Allen movie starring Jesse Eisenberg about the lost cow. Bloomberg's got the cash. More like Moonberg. Okay, I'm done. I'm done. We're done with the cow. Once we get to Moonberg, we're done. We're done when we get to Moonberg. Let's move on. Prequels, ladies and gentlemen. Gambling Man. Dennis Leary's a Boston guy. He's not a New York guy. Belle Biv DeBovine. All right, now we're just getting into the worst puns. Now we're just getting into the worst puns ever. Oh my god. I brought this on all of us. I apologize. I apologize to you. I apologize to the listeners. I apologize to the live viewers. I apologize to the chat room. I apologize to Scott Johnson, who finally got around to auto-hosting this channel. I apologize that this is now on the Frog Fans channel for Moonberg and Belle Biv DeBovine. I'm just going to go ahead and say I apologize for any and all of that. Okay. Let's talk about prequels. This is something I saw from Gambling Man in the chat room before we started. We did get our first pick from the set, I believe, of the new Han Solo movie. It appears to be in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. It features all the creative team for the upcoming film that I believe is released next year, shooting this year, released next year. Let's go ahead and take a look at it here. Where's the beef? All right, come on. So here we go. This is Aiden Einreich, Emilia Clarke, of course, right there in the middle, Daenerys Targaryen. Lord and Miller are the brain trust behind it, Chewbacca, and apparently the new staple. Are you doing a science fiction movie featuring a bunch of young actors? Well, can I interest you in Woody Harrelson? I don't know, man. We're doing the Hunger Games. Maybe you could use a little Woody Harrelson. I don't know. We're doing was he in Ender's Game too? How about a little Woody Harrelson? Doing a zombie movie. Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson is now in Han Solo. Donald Glover, Chewbacca. So let me ask you guys this. What do y'all think about prequels? Because I feel like prequels are, in general, the like bop your knee, react to it, reaction to prequels is negative. It's a negative reaction. Because when we say prequels, especially when we think about Star Wars, we think about the Star Wars prequels. Think about episode 1, 2, and 3. And those, unless you're, you know, some scumbag millennial, are fairly well reviled. So let's put Star Wars out of our mind for right now. And let's understand what we don't like about prequels. Let's just go ahead and figure that out. Let's just understand. What do we find dumb about prequels? Let's try to throw away our preconceived notions and drill down to hard and fast facts, right? Bedrock truths about prequels. I think by far the biggest thing that a prequel has working against it is that we know the end of the story. So here we go. Bad Weave says people hate built-in limitations. You know what happens next. So that's the biggest thing. Is you either want to tell a story that is semi-disconnected from the main movie, right? The movie that you are the prequel to. Or you, and this is where I think prequels wind up going astray, is you try to overcomplicate what is in our minds an already solved position. Like, the central issue with all of the Star Wars prequels is, do we really need to know how he became Darth Vader? Like, is that even the most interesting story that we can tell about that universe? Because I would say probably not. You could tell me how he became Darth Vader in one scene where Vader's dad is like, shut up, slaps him right in the face. And young Anakin Skywalker looks at him and says, like, slow fade, child's face into Darth Vader. And now he's like, F you, Dad. Right? We didn't need 9 hours. We didn't need to know every awkward flirtation he made. We didn't need to know that apparently Padme and a young Anakin Skywalker were in the kind of relationship that Milo, I can't pronounce his last name, would like to protect. You have to be careful about what kind of story you're telling and whether or not the dramatic tension has already been diffused. So, for example, this Han Solo story. You know, the idea of Han Solo is that he was a scoundrel. He's a guy, he's out there. At the point that we meet him in Star Wars, it seems as if he's already lived a full life. And he's lived the kind of life where he doesn't care if he dies tomorrow. Because, you know, hell, he's a man about town. He's a man about the universe. He's living a fast life, and he's trying to live a good-looking corpse. So the idea of doing a story where he's just on a bunch of random adventures, I hope that this takes place in a world where we can just do 9 of these. Just make him space James Bond. And have him, you know, in a world that is building towards civil war. But we don't need it to be, you know, plug right in to the next movie. Doesn't need to end with him landing on Tatooine. Like a certain Star Wars prequel that happened at the end of last year. I'm just saying, even if you like that movie, don't tell me that it wouldn't have been better if it had just taken place a couple months before. So it wasn't saddled with the idea that it had to connect exactly into episode 4. Now, those are underlying truths about prequels, but let me just go ahead and get into what I think rankles a lot of people. Rankles. These aren't necessarily horrible, but for some, it's just like stepping on a Lego. Like, it just is a shooting pain. It rustles their jimmies, says Gambling Man. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is fan service. Fan service. Let me, I'm going to make a bold claim here. And I want someone to correct me if I'm wrong. Email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. If you can think of something that predates this, because I'm going to hang the problem that modern prequels have with fan service around the neck of one movie. One movie and one alone. And I liked this movie. This was a great movie. I enjoyed it. Had tremendous performances. It's an iconic film. It's an important movie to my childhood, as it was the first one that I saw in theaters. But I'm going to say that the first film for which we can blame the gratuitous, useless, and distracting fan service that we hate the most is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Junior. I love Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It's so good. Filled with adventure. Get back to Nazis. That's Indy's bread and butter. The whole, like, the father of Indiana Jones is the original and best, well, not the original, yeah, the original and best James Bond. Awesome, right? Perfect casting. Great script. Action adventure. No ticket. Perfect. Just great. It was awesome. But 15 minutes at the beginning is spent on a flashback scene. A flashback scene in which young Indiana Jones is played by River Phoenix. And it is in that 15 minutes that we not only see why Indiana Jones is afraid of snakes, why Indiana Jones uses a whip, why Indiana Jones has Harrison Ford's scar on his lip. We get every little element. Apparently, this was the most formative 15 minutes in the history of Indiana Jones's life. And it's not bad. And in that moment, I give the movie a pass because nobody had really done it before. At least to my mind. Somebody email me if I'm wrong. But people love those flicks so much that they were cheap ways to get the audience invested and really to reward people who had seen the previous two movies. They're cheap laughs. Because initially, young Indiana Jones is like, whatever, man, snakes, who cares? Then he falls into a pit of snakes and he's like, ah! Oh, he also gets the hat. He gets the hat at the end as well. Everything. All the little accoutrement that kind of makes Indy all happens right there. Now, the flashback itself is fine. It's a young Indiana Jones doing young Indiana Jones stuff. He's going up against somebody that seems to be an elder version of what we now know, because we're familiar with the past movies, what he will become. We also see the earliest dichotomy between young Indiana Jones and his father, who is dismissive about some of the kind of tomb-robbing elements that we know his son will eventually harbor. However, do we need every little thing explained? No, we don't. And I think upon rewatching the movie, it is among the only elements of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade for which has aged very poorly. Not because of what it did, but rather what has become of it. Because in a world where nostalgia is more important than anything, and you've got a million different reboots and reimaginings, and people go to movies of random reboots on some level, just to see how they're going to handle iconic scenes or characters or lines. This was the forebearer. This was the sage-like Dr. Jones sitting at his study asking his precocious son to give back the Cross of Coronado. He was the OG, this film, of the absolutely useless fan service. So that's how we got a hangnail kind of BS that I believe we hate about prequels. But I don't know. I mean, maybe these things, I mean, because like the fan service is fan service for a reason. You know? But there's a line. There's a spectrum for this kind of stuff. Because if it's an artful callback to a moment that we enjoy that also dovetails with the story that we're watching, we reward it. We love it. That's echoing. That's a couplet. That's a reverberation through history that we want to reward. But if you're literally just bringing up stuff that people remember, then you're doing the, like, not another teen movie movies, right? Where you're just saying, like, oh, this one's Varsity Blues, except she farts. And that we don't like. We think that's lazy. We think that's stupid. We think that that's in any way, it's insulting to our passion. It's literally saying, you're so passionate about this, you will come see this movie even if we literally just dress up another actress like the main character, except this time she farts. Also, email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put Jury in the subject line with movies in which you'd like to see redone except for the main character farts. And write them in the subject line, too. Fart City Blues is the scene in Not Another Teen Movie. I don't even know if they do that in that movie, but I assume they do. If not, if it ain't, they ought to be. I am excited for Han Solo, though. I am excited. I think it's gonna be a fine flick. I think it's gonna be it's got a great cast. I just hope they trust the cast. I guess that's my biggest thing. I hope they trust the cast. They trust the script. They don't need to overload it with all the MSG, with all the callbacks. You know? A mighty breaking wind? I don't know. You can't do comedy on comedy with the fart stuff. Schindler's List? Oh, jeez. All right. These weapons work, Der Fuhrer. All right. Okay. That's our Moomberg. That makes us get move on to the other to the next thing. All right. How about this one? Uber. What do we think about Uber? Do we hate Uber? Do we like Uber? We into Uber? We not into Uber? Where are we at? Uber man can't stay out of the news. Can't stay out of the news with the oobs. Blog published earlier this week. Susan Fowler is the author. She is a former engineer from Google, or from Uber, rather. Tells a story of a year she spent there wherein there was all sorts of HR nightmares. More like Moober. I love the cow puns. Now, I don't want to get too deep in here. I don't want to get into, you know, what our lines are of moral responsibility. This isn't that kind of show, especially when we're talking about Schindler's List with farts. But I do just kind of want to ask, in general, it is my belief that as culture fractions, or as culture fractures, rather, and very small businesses have been shown to become very big businesses very fast, especially out here in Silicon Valley, where, you know, you can connect a lot of things together very, very quickly by way of the internet and apps and mobile computing. And Uber can be an idea on one day, and then 5 years later be the fastest growing company that has to take state dinners with the Chinese officials to see what their expansion plan over the next 20 years is going to be. That we look at things a little bit differently. Because if there's an HR scandal at Disney, then I believe our reaction is closer to, well, they need to fire that HR manager. That's a bad job by them. They need to be reprimanded. Because Disney seems to be a gigantic corporation. And we're like, well, geez, man, like, get out the middle management. But I don't necessarily think, I mean, maybe if I'm very, very active on some of these issues, I'm going to avoid seeing a Disney movie, or I'm going to make sure that I cancel my ESPN, the magazine subscription. But Uber's different. I think it's different for a lot of reasons, and I'm not going to pretend like this is an isolated incident. I think people have a problem with Uber for a lot of different reasons. However, I do think that the art and the artist in business right now, especially when it comes to tech, is very close. Closer than it was before. It's closer than like a small chain of restaurants, which probably has less employees. Smaller than, you know, a company that does something very boring in the background of our economy, like provide pulp or something, right? If something bad happens there, somebody writes a scathing HR editorial, we think like, oh God, the villain here is the HR person. Whereas with Uber, the villain is Uber. The solution to this HR problem is delete your app. And I guess my question to everybody is, what is the line between art and artist? What is the line between art and artist in the modern world of technology? And again, I'm not trying to say that Uber doesn't have a long history of doing stuff like this. Because for a lot of people, they do. And I don't want to step on that. Just saying, man, I should have done this one earlier. I'm just now realizing I can't do, you know, prequels and New York escaping cow. And then do like, hey, what's our social responsibility in business? I should have done maybe this in the middle and then come back to something fun. Probably should have gone New York cow last. And now for the iPhone 6 review. All right, somebody, FitzShiv has been asking about PewDiePie. Man, let's understand something about PewDiePie. he is a very, very small part of the culture in general, and I know he's massive, but compared to if he were to be on network television 20 years ago, he's very small. He does a very, very niche kind of content. He also, and I don't necessarily blame him for this, because I certainly, you could dig up a supercut of me making reference to Nazis and stuff like that. That's a go-to joke for him. If he wants to think of the most offensive thing that could be said, Nazis are, that's a thing. Like, that's a thing for him. And there's also a reference where he talks a lot more in that joke. I think he, I'm going to say problematic, and I mean this in a very specific way, because his message in the joke is lost if you say Jews instead of Nazis. Making fun of Nazis is making fun of the people that did it. Jokingly embodying the Nazi idea, while, you know, your line for humor may vary, can be considered a joke, oftentimes can get you in trouble, man. I mean, here's the thing. Racist, sexist, homophobic humor. We reward it more when we find it funny because it's dangerous. Meaning, you better make sure that your point is funny or else you will blow up. And I don't think this is an issue of politically correct or politically incorrect. Like, I don't think it's anything like that. I think that that's why we find it funnier than other kinds of jokes. Because it is taboo. Because it is something that we shouldn't be saying. So, when you say it correctly, when you're Richard Pryor, when you're Dave Chappelle, when you're Louis C.K., Louis C.K. says the N-word on stage. And he is revered. Why? Because he's funny. Because his jokes are funny. A white guy can say the N-word on stage because the jokes connect. Because the jokes are funny. PewDiePie got caught up because the jokes weren't funny. And that's the dice. That's the dice that you roll. By the way, go ahead and cut this clip out. Cut this clip out because there's going to be a time where I'm going to get a more high-profile job. There's going to be a time where somebody, I'm going to be drawing a paycheck for somebody else. And I'm going to, people aren't going to like me. Some people are. Some people won't. And at some point, a super cut of every terrible thing that I have ever said on Night Attack, on the albums, on Jury, everything out of context is going to get cut up and put into one gigantic supercut, and it's all going to be over. It's all going to be over, and we will all know it. And I hope that all we can say is that when that comes out and when everything goes away, you can just say, you want to know what? Also play this clip. Because I knew it was coming. And really, my only defense to it, my only defense to any of this is that I do hope that the people who have been around the longest can also, you know, fill that conversation with some of the other elements, some of the more contextual things that kind of bring everything together. I hope so. Also, PewDiePie screwed up because you can't get caught up in that situation and then also torch the press. Like, I know it's this is like kind of PR 101. But if you've never driven in snow before, you realize that you got to turn into the skid, not away from it. You just when you're in that kind of a free fall, you can't in your reaction torch the press while you are spiraling out of control. Like, that's the problem. Also, you got to be closer with the press. Because here's the thing. Donald Trump can torch the press, but Donald Trump has a relationship with the press. Donald Trump torches the press in the way that you would torch your somebody you know that you're still going to call and invite out for drinks. All right. Let's go ahead and get to your emails. You can email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. Again, jury in the subject line. Jonathan writes, longtime listener, second time emailer. I got a problem and I'm hoping you can give literally any guidance to me on it. I got a master's degree in public health policy. I was about to be a PhD student in community health, but for reasons beyond my control, I've since been let go from the PhD program, leaving me with no plan on what to do this summer, let alone this fall. This is mostly because, with the political situation the way it is, the quote-unquote talent market in public health has suddenly become flooded with people who are much more qualified than me. So I have no jobs I could even compete for. I've come up with two scenarios that are most likely courses of action. Keep in mind, I am single with nobody else to support, and I'd prefer to stay in Seattle where I am now. One, I've been making ends meet for the last 2 years as a consultant, mostly teaching nonprofit groups how to use IT better. The job itself has been okay, and it pays the bills, but I hate having to do things like run down leads and choose my clients. I would never drink coffee in a Glengarry Glen Ross world. It's just not something I excel at. I could expand this business, but to be even relatively happy in it, I would have to hire someone to do sales for me, which would probably not work money-wise. Two, I take the fact that I have a master's degree and I milk it for all it's worth in a completely unrelated industry. Honestly, I'm prepping for an IT exam right now. Computers have always been a passion and a hobby of mine, and if I could get certified, there might actually be a job where I could pay off my student loan sometime before I die. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention I have about 180,000 in student loans. Let me go ahead and read that one again. Let me go ahead and read that one again, everybody. Hold on now. Let me just go ahead and go back on down there and read that one again. Just so y'all know, I'm just going to read that one again. I'm going to read it again. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that I have $180,000 in student loans after my MPH to pay off. But I'm on an income-based repayment, so if I pay whatever they calculate based on my currently meager income for 25 years, the rest is forgiven. That would put me at paying off student loans until I'm 58. If I assume I will never make the $2,000 a month required to pay it off in 10. So my options are expand my business for myself and maybe never have insurance again, and also maybe never maybe not be able to pay my rent, or throw away the master's degree I just paid a shitload of money for, but have a chance at doing normal things like getting married and maybe buying a house before I die. What do you think? Okay. Number one, thank you, Jonathan, for writing in. I'm not going to answer your question. I'm not going to answer your question. Because, I mean, you know what you want to do. You want to do the other thing, and you have to get over the fact that you spend a bunch of money on your master's degree, and you want to be happy and healthy, and you know, at some point you'll probably wind up going back into the field that you got your master's degree in, but you just got to understand that you made a bad buy. And you have to get over the fact that there is no such, I mean, that there is such a thing as the sunk cost fallacy, that you believe that because you have sunk so much time and effort into this degree that now you have to honor it, or it makes it feel like you are less of a person if you don't. How many people are listening to this right now that are either in high school or in college? I'm just kind of curious. If you are in the chat room, let me know. If you're listening, then go ahead and email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. because I want everybody, whether I'm talking to you directly, if I'm not talking to you directly, i.e. you are out of school, I want you to make it your business when you are talking to children that you don't repeat damaging things like, you got to go to college. And I want you to instead repeat things like, if you're going to fuck around, don't be in college. College is kind of like a, especially when you're dealing with these student loans. It's kind of like like some sort of acidic solution. Like, it can probably make you better, but you shouldn't stay in there too long. There is a toll. There is a cost to staying in college too long. I mean, I remember when I was at Syracuse, I would know people that would, like, change your majors, like, 3 times. And not even to anything interesting. Like, they would go from, like, sociology to anthropology to philosophy. And each time they'd do it, and they'd have to look at the 19 more credits that they would need to get the degree in whatever their new pathway is, you're just tacking on years, or rather, I mean, credits, basically. And that's what you pay in. $180,000 that does not immediately put you in a profession where you can make, within 5 years, like, at least $100,000 a year? Man, it's crazy. And I know people do it, man. I know people that have gotten into, I've had friends that, you know, close friends, racked up $250,000 in student loans. It's a lot of cash, man. I'm just saying, things have gotten crazy, dude. Things have gotten crazy. I left college with $33,000 in student loans, and I thought that was a big thing. I thought that was like, man, I'll tell you what, I'm never going to pay for this. Got out of it. I was in debt through my 20s. I was out of debt by the time I was 30. Yikes. Yipes stripes, man. Jonathan, I'm curious. If you're going to, just email me in what your student debt is. And I can not read your name if you don't want. But I'm curious what people's student debt is. Dale writes, micro goal for 2017, not to pee my pants this year. I'm not a habitual pants peer. I just figured it would be a gimme. Fast forward to this morning. I work on historical homes. There was a busted water main for a multiplex. I shut off the valve, and it didn't work. So I'm shin-deep in water, trying to get it to stop. I had consumed a giant coffee. I was sitting in running water. Equals failed micro goal. Man, where else are you going to hear this? Where else are you going to hear stories about people peeing their pants? Come on. This is like the best show ever. I, Morpheus, writes, I failed to Michael down my Vincents in 2017. Hashtag micro goal. Create Michael down my Vincents event reminder for 2018. And he then showed me exactly the reminder that he has to Michael down his Vincents in 2018. We also got a late one here. This is Austin. Says, hey, Justin, long time, first time. I really enjoyed your Valentine's Day talk. I've encountered many females who feel this way around the holidays, and funny enough, I get the same feelings as well. I grew up in a Christian family where my parents and relatives expect all their children to be married and popping out children by their 18th birthday. And then there's me, 24-year-old male in a weird position. I'm funny and attractive, so people automatically assume I have a character flaw because I have yet to rope in a girl. And maybe there is something wrong with me. I'm a Christian guy who is very cynical about the church and how we as Christians act in our society. Jesus didn't judge. He ate with the outcasts of society and loved them no matter what, which makes me lean to the left when it comes to politics, which is not the most popular viewpoint within the church. But this cynicism ends up bleeding into my life, which is something that I am working on and may be another big flaw of mine, which leads me to my question. Even though I am cynical in the church and some of the mindsets and practices. I still know my stuff, and I run a young adult small group at a local church. It does not take a genius to see that these are the leftovers, the people who are not yet married, and for some of them, good reason. My problem is that there's a fellow leader who I'm interested in, who I'm having a difficult time reading if she's interested as well. Maybe I'm completely overthinking, but I am having a hard time asking her out. She's incredibly bright and forward-thinking, and I think we would work really, really well together. Still, in the back of my mind, I worry if she says no, or if we do go out and my cynical outlook turns her off. I've masked my outlook it too much, and I come off as fake, and she breaks it off. Then this will make the group awkward for us. Maybe this is just the risk of asking her out, and I'm doubting myself. But I would love to hear your thoughts. Hopefully my email isn't too scatterbrained or convoluted. I'm a scientist, not a writer, for good reason. Solo in Seattle. Oh, sorry. I read your name. So, NinjaSteve79 in the Twitch chat says, stop overthinking and just ask. Which is the answer. What you need to break out of is this idea that everything has a gigantic cost in the world. In fact, embarrassment is cheap. Especially if you build up your muscles on the other end of rebounding through it. Failure is a tremendously easy option. You know, if you go out on a date, if you're confident and say, hey, you want to go out, get a coffee? I don't know what Christian youth leaders do. You want to go bowling? You want to, play hopscotch? I don't know. What do you guys eat? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Is it? You want to eat steak on Friday? Is that still a thing? Sorry. All right. She says no? Cool. All right. It's just curious because you're pretty and you're nice. You want to go mingle? Hey, you want to be my steady for the sock hop? If you go on a date and everything's weird, then everything's weird. It's fine. You know, the only thing that you would be worried about is if she left and was just talking mad shit about you. But even then, it's like, as long as you are the pro about it, as long as you are confident about the fact that, you know, a million billion things happen in life. And this is from somebody who believes there is no master plan. What's your excuse? There's supposed to be a divine entity that looks out for all of us, especially the devout. You should be, man, let Jesus take the wheel, baby. You should just be saying, hey, what's up? You want to go to the Bennigan's? I don't know if there's Bennigan's. We can go get some apps, half-priced apps at 5 o'clock. It doesn't have to be a thing. We'll go get coffee. I don't know if you can drink coffee. We'll talk. Well, BS. You see, if you want to go see the movie, you want to go see a movie, huh? All right, cool. I think it's fine. Just let your anxiety melt. Let everybody have a good time. You know, just say, hey, look, God is my co-pilot, and I want you to be my first mate. Of course, everybody, you can email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. My Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat is Justin R. Young if you want to connect with me. I usually give a thumbs up for everybody who Snapchats me. Maybe a wink. This week, I want everybody to just stare uncomfortably at me on Snapchat. I'll stare uncomfortably at you. You can hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. Folks, that about wraps it up for me. My name is Justin Robert Young. If you would like to enjoy the show, then go ahead and get it on all your favorite podcasting apps. Make sure that you leave a review. Rate, review, subscribe. Till next time. My name is Justin Robert Young, reminding you to please don't die.
you have enjoyed this program.